And welcome back to the Greg Herenda Show, where we are honored and privileged to have Mike Crispino. Everyone in New York knows him, but now we know him as the voice of the Huskies of Connecticut. Basketball, football, and baseball. Mike, welcome to WFDU and the Greg Herenda Show.
Greg, thanks so much for having me. Pleasure.
Oh, man. I tell you, when let the truth be known, you did our game against St. Francis of Pennsylvania. It was an exciting game, but the Knights did not come on top. But just seeing you in the gym, man, brought back some incredible memories that I've had. Like, I mean, and you've worn so many different hats, but you with MSG and with the Knicks and with the Giants, and it's just really, really good to see you again, and know that you're kicking it up in stores, and you and Seth did a tremendous job on the game. And what did you think of the product, the show, the NEC level of basketball? I know you're covering Danny Hurley, and I coached Danny back in the day, and UConn is a up and rising program again, about to be back in the Big East. But what did you think of the NEC, the competition, the level, the atmosphere, etc.?
I thought it was a tremendous game, Greg. I mean,
yep.
100-85. On the way home, I'm listening to Florida State play Virginia.
That's right.
And they're struggling to score 50 points.
I know.
50. 50
yes.
Each. I couldn't believe it. I'm
yeah.
listening and I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, that's boring.
Yes.
I thought that was an exciting game, what we had.
Yep.
You know, I thought maybe if you had the Knights had one more run in them, you could have got it to single digits. You
right.
got it to 9 there late.
Yes.
Could have got it to 5 or something. It could have been an unbelievable game.
No,
no. It could have turned into, you know what I mean, overtime or something. That would have been even doubly fun.
It's funny because our rivalry that we've developed with St. Francis last year, the last three times we were in the conference tournament, we ended their season. So and we've ended it twice on the road. So last year we won the conference championship in Loretta, and now last night they beat us here. So the kind of the home court advantage in our level is kind of sometimes it backfires on you. And but last night it was just a matter of we just couldn't guard those guys. They're talented. We obviously have to get better defensively. But no, the league, Mike, it's an exciting, fast league. The seats are nominally priced, and you're right on the floor. And you can, you know, it's for people in Bergen County in New Jersey, even people coming over from New York, it's a great bang for your buck, and we continually try to sell it. I'm glad that you saw it so that you could, continue hopefully promoting it and doing some more games of ours.
Well, people ask me about, you know, the mid-majors and versus the games that I do for UConn and the
right.
places I go with the AAC. And, yep. Listen, any basketball fan who gets to the arena wants to be close.
That's right.
You get a seat that's close, that's fabulous, because you can really appreciate what these guys are doing out there,
no.
whether it's blocking shots, making threes, driving to the hoop, you
yep.
know, tipping in offensive rebounds. I mean, you can't appreciate that as much unless you're on top of it. And,
no question.
And in your conference, you're on top of it. I mean, I've been to Sacred Heart. I've been to St. Francis. I've been to
yep.
Central. I've been to most of the gyms in your league.
Sure.
And I think for the fans, it's tremendous because you're seeing a high level of college basketball from up close and personal, and you can't beat that.
It really is true. I've had a lot of great friends that have come and that went to UCLA, friends that have gone to Oklahoma, guys that have gone to St. John's, and they come to our games, and they come back, and they're like, Greg, it's humble. And they get the chair back seating. I think it's 25. It might be more than 25 now, Kenny. I'm not sure of the price. But they don't care because they know people that know basketball are like, okay, this isn't the highest level, but guess what? It's exciting. And you were with Seth Greenberg, one of our great alums. How was the synergy between you and Seth last night? How'd you feel about it?
Well, I love working with Seth because he's brilliant, right? He's a really good basketball coach, just a great guy. And
right.
we've worked a few games together. We were talking about it before the game, actually. Last time him and I worked, we were in Louisville, and it was Seton Hall, Louisville, and there was 23,000 people, right?
Place yes.
was rocking. This is 2 years ago.
Right.
And now we're sitting in your gym, and we're saying, what a difference. But actually,
yep.
no, it isn't. The court's the same. The baskets are the same height.
That's right.
These guys want to play just as bad.
Exactly.
I mean, what do we care? I mean, we're there to watch a game
Amen.
And broadcast a game. And in a lot of ways, I enjoy being in the NEC and
right.
MAC and places like that because these guys value it It's a four-year deal.
Sure.
You know, you're not thinking too far ahead. You're living in the moment. I mean,
that's right.
The coaching's really good. All that stuff makes our job much easier.
And
really,
the NCAA is attainable. It's, you know, it really comes down to 1 week, and we've been fortunate enough to win it two out of the last 4 years. So you have that carrot is always in front of you that you can get on that big stage on Tuesday night and win that ESPN game and go to either Dayton or go play a number one or a number two seed. So it's, and the other thing about you, Mike, doing my homework is that you're an NEC grad, you're an LIU graduate. Is that correct?
Right. That's right.
You know,
well,
we have to have you come and speak at our I'll talk to Noreen Morris about having you speak at our media day, which is in Brooklyn. You would be terrific. And you play the sax, which automatically makes you a cool cat. Who taught you and why do you play the saxophone?
Well, it was when I first started in broadcasting way back in another century. I was in music. I did music shows. My first professional job on the air, I was the music director of a public station up in New Hampshire.
Wow.
Which was a startup. It was Public Radio of New Hampshire.
Right.
And I was the music director, and the show that I was given to do was a nighttime show every night, 8 to 12 midnight, a jazz show. So I knew some of the music, but I didn't know that much. But my other job was developing the library for this startup radio station. So
Kenny,
I had to dig in and start to understand all the great artists and why they were important and why we needed their records. It was records then. It wasn't Spotify. We didn't have any of that stuff. So that's how I got to know that, and there was a guy I ran into who was playing live. He was a sax player. He was working at Dartmouth teaching, but he also was a great performer, and he'd be in Boston and other places. I ran into him a couple times, and so I don't know. We just started talking about it, and I said, you know, I'd like to learn how to play that saxophone. And he goes, well, just come on up. I'll show you some things, and we started getting together, and he taught me a bunch of stuff, and he was a great performer and a great player himself. And he was fun because he could play piano while I learned how to play the sax, which is very valuable because there's chord changes, right, and progression that you have to stick with when you're playing a saxophone and you're improvising. So Fred Haas was great. He was fabulous. I love the guy, and he was just an unbelievable teacher. So we just while I'm doing the radio show at night, I'm going up to Dartmouth, which, you know, was a bit of a ride, but we'd have a lesson like two or three times a week. And then I'd go practice. I had a lot of free time because I worked at night then. I didn't do much during the day, so I worked on playing the saxophone.
We are speaking with Mr. Mike Crispino, 5-time Emmy winner. Come on, man. You're just a low-key, chill, like, would you consider yourself a New Yorker or a New Englander? Or right? Like, what are you, Mike? Because you just have this, you got a very cool way about yourself. How would you describe yourself, where you're from, and who are you as a person?
I would say I'm a tri-state area person.
There you go.
I went to school in New York, right?
Yep.
I went to school in New York. I worked at MSG for 25 years. I worked in Boston prior to MSG for 5 years.
Yep.
But I've lived in Connecticut almost the entire time, except when I worked in Boston.
Gotcha.
But when I worked at MSG, I lived in Connecticut. I took the train and I was going to New York, so I was immersed in the New York scene for sure. So
yes.
I would say that's the bulk of my career, but
right.
I know Boston pretty well, too, because I spent 5 good years up
there.
I covered Larry Bird.
No, right? I was
playing with Larry Bird, man.
I went to
Kevin McHale and Robert Parrott.
Oh, God. I hated those teams were so good, and I hated them because I was a Bernard King, UB Brown, Rick Pitino, Nick fan back then. And as good as the Knicks played, they would run into the Pistons or run into the Celtics, and that was the end of their season. And it was just – and you were up there because I went to Merrimack College in North Andover, Massachusetts, and I remember you doing the games, and I was bitter. I'm still bitter. I'm so happy that the Patriots lost, or as they say, the Pats lost. Well, compare – I know it's not fair, Mike, but compare – working in Boston compared to New York. You said, I know it was 25-5, New York being the bigger time spent. Compare the cities are so different, but just working and the whole experience between the two cities and franchises.
Well, Boston, you know, that was my first big city job. I had worked in Hartford for about five
years
prior to that, which is kind of my hometown. We had the Whalers. Yep. UConn wasn't really much. It was on the rise, but it wasn't quite there yet. So the Whalers were the big thing in Hartford.
That's
then
right.
I went to Boston, and every sport was huge, except the colleges, Greg, which really,
I know,
that always worried me. I didn't like that because I got to be friends with Jim O'Brien at BC and then with Tom Coughlin, coach BC's football
sure,
team.
Sure, sure.
So I was always covering BC. I wanted to cover the colleges, but no one covered
it. Was in
them
the background. No, you're pro. Right.
Yeah, all
you're
the right. pros. You had the Celtics. You had the Bruins. The Patriots weren't that big a story, but they were starting to be good. So that was a big story. And, of course,
sure.
the Red Sox. That was huge. I mean,
oh, yeah.
the ratings for those teams were unbelievable.
Everybody watches the Sox.
Boston was an amazing, amazing sports market. Still
yep.
is. The
yep.
passion level is amazing.
Yep.
I think there's more people interested in sports in Boston percentage-wise.
No, you're right.
Like if you said
no question.
Whatever.
No question.
5 million people.
Right.
Right. There's 4 million sports fans.
That's right.
New York, you got 15 million people. And you might have the same 4 million sports fans.
No, that's a great point. In New York, you have a little bit more of a cosmopolitan setting, and you have the theater, and not that Boston doesn't, but no, if you're in Boston and it's a Red Sox night on a Saturday night, you know the deal, or the Celtic game in North Station is getting on the North End is getting out. I mean, the city just vibrates around those teams.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no doubt. And I've been lucky. I've had all those years
really
in those
have.
Great cities. And I, we haven't had too much championship, stuff going on
no.
in New York over the last two decades. But I was lucky to be around the Celtics in the 80s.
Yep.
They were kind of at the end of their run. But,
just
being
good.
Around Dennis Johnson and Robert Parrish and
yep.
McHale and Ainge and obviously Bird was just a trip. You think you're in a dream world or something.
Exactly.
Just being around those guys.
Mike, take us back, because really the Greg Herenda Show, we bring guests on, and we want to know the genesis, where they started, how it happened. Your career, when did it start where you said, you know what, man, I think I can do this. I could be really good at it, and here's my opportunity. I believe you started at WVIT in Hartford, but was it at LIU back in the day, or when you were a seventh grader in high school? When did it click for you, and when did you realize this was your passion?
Well, I was always a sports fan, and I always played sports, right? I played football as in the Pony Leagues and Little
oh, yeah.
League Baseball and all the way up through Legion Baseball and football in high school. But I was never really a broadcast person. I wasn't that conscious of
right.
it.
Right.
I think it started when I got out of college. At LIU, I fooled around with a couple radio shows, but I wasn't serious about it. And
gotcha.
Got out of college, and now I have to get a job, right? So I get a couple of jobs. One, I'm working at a recreation department up in Manchester, Connecticut, which was my hometown at the time.
Yep.
And I did that for a year. And then I got a master's degree up in Boston at Simmons College, which was related to educational media. It was before the World Wide Web even existed.
Yep.
So I wanted to work in the university system. I liked being around educators and the university systems, and I thought maybe
I can see that.
I could work on that level. And so I got a master's degree. It was just starting up the program at Simmons, and I ended up going back to LIU and working for a year in that
I did
in
not
that
know
field.
That.
But,
okay.
Yeah, it was boring, though, Greg. It was boring.
Yeah.
Then I went into retail because I was broke. I had no money. So
right.
I was like, I got to do something.
Sure.
So my father owned a food business. He had a couple of supermarkets, independent supermarkets. So I went to work for him
okay.
for two or three years, and I had to work too hard. Honestly,
exactly.
I'm not that I'm lazy, but every Saturday I had to work. Some days I'm like, what am I doing? I said, my life is just a boring thing.
Right.
What am I going to do with my life?
Yeah.
And that's when I had a friend of mine who we had worked together at the University of Hartford's radio station, because I was doing that, working at the University of Hartford radio,
okay.
working in retail. I was working three jobs, whatever, picking up a show here or there, where I got paid a little bit of money.
Sure.
And he went up, he moved to New Hampshire. And took a job at a rock and roll station, and he said, "You've got to come up here. It's unbelievable, on a lot
it.
Of levels."
Right.
So I'm
yep.
saying to myself, "Maybe I'll give that a shot." And I went up there, and I interviewed for this job at the startup public radio station, and that's how I started in broadcast for a full time gig. But from there was the funny story, because I'm there for a year, and I'm saying to myself, "Wow, there's too much snow up here. I can't live up here. This is brutal. It's just brutal."
Yes,
and so. Because during the day, Greg, my job was to go around the state of New Hampshire and pass out pamphlets about our programming schedule because no one knew us. They didn't even know we were there.
Sure.
So that was my job during the day, and I'm driving around in the wintertime in New Hampshire. And I'm
brutal.
Going, what the hell am I doing up here? So a friend, you know, ESPN had just gone on the air, okay, 79 or something like that.
Right.
And a friend of mine's girlfriend went to work there. She had been working at Connecticut Public Television. A lot of Connecticut Public Television technicians types went over to work in Bristol when they were kicking it off over there.
Yep.
So he said, why don't you call her? I'm like, okay, I'll call her. And, you know, fortunately, she was working for this guy, Bill Fitz, who was kind of one of the real pioneers, one of the first guys who were involved in programming ESPN. So she says, send me a tape. And I'm like, tape? I have no tape. All I do is a radio show.
Yes.
She goes, go across the street. There's a cable outlet over there.
Make
see
it
if they'll put you on camera and do like 3 minutes of a sports report. And I'm thinking to myself, well, this is a long shot. And so I do it.
That's an incredible story.
I know. I sent it to her. She calls me. She goes, listen, we're going to bring in like two or three people to do updates. We don't know. Like at that point, they were just doing like an occasional college basketball game, a soccer game. They were doing UConn sports. They were doing anything, right?
Sure.
And so she says, come in. We're going to do some update thing. This is what Bill's deciding he's going to try to do. I'm like, okay. Right. So I go down there, virtually zero experience on television, none. So I'm a hack. Yeah. I walk in there, and who do I see? In the office, the first five guys, Greg Gumbel, Chris Berman, Tom Meese, Bob Lee, and the fifth guy, I can't remember the fifth guy.
That's Murderer's Row, probably Lee Leonard or somebody like that.
Yes, Lee Leonard. So they were sitting around in a room, and honest to God, I'm not exaggerating.
Yep.
It was about as big as that officials room we dressed in yesterday.
Right,
your
right.
place. It was small, man.
Yeah.
So I'm there. I'm looking at these guys, and they were all young. They had just been, you know, starting out in broadcasting.
Sure.
Maybe they had worked a couple years in television. Gumbel was the biggest guy because he had worked in New York for a couple years, and he had come up there. George Grand, who worked in New Haven.
Oh, I remember
DNA
George. George is one of the originals.
George?
Yep.
Yeah, Lou Palmer. So they had like five or six guys, and then they had me. Me and another guy, Jimmy Myers from Boston, who was another rookie type.
Yep.
So they start sticking us on doing these updates. We had no video. We had no we had no teleprompter. It was all ad lib. Now, I had no experience, so I was bombing every day. Every day I was just crapping out trying to do this thing. And I'm thinking to myself, this isn't going to last because I just don't have the skill set. I'm not ready for this, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I lasted 6 months. They said, listen, we're going to do something different. We're not going to keep you around. And myself and Jimmy got jettisoned. And then eventually they started the SportsCenter idea. But I ended up with the tape from ESPN. And I went to the local station, VIT, in Hartford, with an NBC affiliate.
Sure.
And I was a local guy. And they said, okay, listen, we're going to look for a local guy to do the weekends sports. So you're as good as anybody. And you got a tape from this place, ESPN.
That,
so you're
in.
And that's how I started doing it.
That's a great story.
What a rise.
And it seemed like you were just like in, you know, professional abyss. You didn't know like the supermarket deal. You were going from one thing to another. And then I think I learned an expression a long time ago, Mike, you gravitate to that in which you secretly love. Meaning, like, you know, you love music. You're a people person. You love sports. You love me. You're a good looking guy. You know what I'm saying? So put it all together, and that's what you became, is who you are, really. And it's that's an awesome story, because some people give you the other story, Mike, where, you know, when I was 7 years old, I wanted to, you know, call Yankee game and Bob Costas with the St. Louis Cardinals and all that. But your story is real.
No, I was throwing a tennis ball against the back of our garage, getting my mother upset when I was seven, making all these black marks on it because I wouldn't, you know,
I have
to ball in the mud and throw it against the garage.
Oh, God bless. I have to ask you this on a professional and personal note. I coached Danny Hurley. I was the assistant coach at Seton Hall, where Danny played for PJ, and then George Blaney, who was my mentor. So I was Danny's coach for 2 years at Seton Hall, and know the family, Bob and Bobby and Chris and Melissa, the whole family. And to see him rise now as a national coach and a great tactician, after having coached him is just incredible to me. You've got to tell me about your interaction with Danny, watching him coach, watching him work the sidelines off the camera. Give me the Danny Hurley scoop.
It's hard, I know. I liked him since he was in Seton Hall, even though I always felt like, you know, he was an angry young guy, and he was always, you know, underachieving in his mind, and
yes.
He struggled. I mean, you know the story. He
yes.
left. He wanted to quit and all this stuff.
No, absolutely.
I'm sure you were part of that.
I was right in the middle of it. Yep.
Right. So, yeah. So now I've known him, and I worked in New York, and I followed his career, what he did. Interestingly, I lost track for a couple of years when he was at Rutgers. He went to be an assistant at Rutgers.
That's exactly
right. I didn't pay much attention. I'm like, okay,
sure.
He's over there. And then he went to St. Benedict's. And
yes.
We, you know, on Sports Desk, I don't know if you recall this back in like the mid-2000s.
Yes.
We brought Marv Albert back to television there.
Yeah.
And I became the reporter for the shows. So Marv would always come in and go, hey, what are you going to do today? Because he loved me being out doing stories, because that would kill time and he wouldn't have to talk for a half an hour.
Right.
And he liked that. So I'm like, okay, well, today we're going to go to the Giants. So we're going to talk to blah, blah, blah. And then I'd say, well, listen, why don't we go do a story on St. Benedict's? They got a really good basketball team. And he was up for it. And Marv was like, yeah, let's do that. So we would do that.
Cool.
And I got a chance to go out there, and I went to St. Benedict's. And I know you've probably been there to that place.
Oh, many times.
I go in the gym, I'm looking around, it's so dark in there. I'm like, where is he? Where's Dan? Where's Danny?
Sure.
Comes over, and it, like, he seems really comfortable as a coach. And
yes.
I really didn't think he could be.
No,
player,
you're so
thinking,
right.
You're not going to be a coach.
So right.
And so, yeah, that's how I got to know him a little bit better. We did a nice story. You know, he had J.R. Smith in his gym with him.
Absolutely.
Thompson, the kids with the Cavaliers now. And,
yep. Yep.
Anyway, I started to believe, like, this guy. And then what I realized is that he had been doing it for like 6-7 years,
right,
in a high school in St. Benedict's Prep. And I'm thinking, this guy must be serious about doing this.
Oh, no question.
It doesn't look like that attractive a job to me.
No,
you know what
but
I'm
he loved it, and he was great. He's a really good basketball coach.
Right. So 9 years of that, and then of course he goes to Wagner. I'm doing a game in the conference.
Yep.
And Wagner, and he had his brother with him as an assistant.
It was hysterical.
We walk into his office. I can't remember who I was doing a game with, but it was hilarious. It was good to see him.
Right.
And we're joking around. You know, I'm like, are you serious? Do you think you could be a college coach? And we'd be just giving each other jabs.
Yeah.
And
sure.
He would say this, and I would say that, whatever.
Sure.
And so then, obviously, a couple of years, he does well in that second year, goes to Rhodey. And I saw him again. I did a Thanksgiving tournament in Brooklyn, and his team knocked off Seton Hall. Right? And that was a big deal for them.
That was huge.
And then they had Virginia, and they got pounded by them. But anyway,
right.
I got to spend a few more days with him. And then ultimately, you know, a couple of years later, he ends up at UConn. I end up at UConn. And I felt like that was a perfect synthesis, you know, synergy, because I know him.
Yes.
I know him as a player. I know him as a coach. I know
it's
his family.
Ideal
not,
fit
I
for
don't
you.
Know him as well as you do. But
yeah,
you know what I'm
no, absolutely. And you enjoy working with him, I would imagine.
Yeah, because you know what? He's honest. He's authentic.
Yes.
I like to joke around. I'm honest with him.
Yeah.
You know, not all the honesty we have goes on the air, obviously.
No,
no
question.
That could be ugly.
Yes, yes.
But he is great at like giving you the real thing. And I'm
no
like,
question.
And I'm like that. I don't like the guys to give me, you know, fake stuff.
Exactly.
Like you were at the shooter on yesterday. You were giving me the real thing.
The real deal.
And Rob Krimble, too. I mean, you guys are like,
Rob's
here's
a good
what it
man.
Is. Here's what we do. Here's what we got to do.
Exactly.
And, you know, not everyone's like that. Trust me. Not everyone's like that.
Well, Mike.
And that's a real positive.
Mike, not everyone is like you. You are a good man. I just appreciate you doing our game, coming on the show. I'm going to try to get you to media day for the NEC. I think it's a no-brainer.
I'm ready.
And I think Noreen has a check, too. I think you get paid if you do that as well.
What?
So.
Oh.
Well, we'll figure that cut out. But, Mike, really, as a New York sports fan, I miss you. MSG, the years when you were at MSG, I remember you the years when you were in Boston. You're a great professional, a great man, and I can't thank you enough for being on the show and being part of WFDU and the Greg Herenda Show.
Well, Greg, thanks so much. I hope to see you again on court soon, I hope.
Amen. No, we'll be back. And we're down, but we're not out. But thanks so much for being on, and wish Danny and all the good people up at Connecticut, especially D. Rowe, my very best.
Yeah, I'm going to see Danny tomorrow. We're playing Villanova Saturday. I will definitely tell him I was on the show.
You got
it,
my brother.
Appreciate it.
Okay, right. Mike, thank you. And we'll be back with more of the Greg Herenda Show after this.
Hey, everybody, this is Mike Crispino, voice of the UConn Huskies. You're listening to the Greg Herenda Show on WFDU.